Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Good evening, friends and lovers. These are a bunch of video nasties. This is the Video Nasty Project, and I am your host, Tony. Tonight, we're taking a look at a movie by two-time repeat offender, Ruggiero Deodato. He is the one, of course, who did Cannibal Holocaust. But tonight's movie, we're taking a look at House by the Edge of the Park. It's got David Hess in it. That means it's going to be some rapey fun. Yay! Check out the trailer. And that was House by the Edge of the Park, and not Last House on the Left, although it might as well have been. Want to tell us about it?
You have Alex, who's this mechanic who works at a garage in Manhattan somewhere.
David Hess.
David Hess, yep. From Last House on the Left, ironically enough.
Well, so, when you got to get somebody to get your rape on, you got to go to David Hess, man.
So, at the beginning of the movie, he runs down this woman in a car next to his going down the freeway or a street highway. Runs her off the road. He assaults her. He rapes her. He strangles her to death while he's raping her. And then later, this car with a couple, a blonde guy and his girl, his short, dark-haired girlfriend, pulled into his garage while he's talking with one of his friends. And he and Ricky invite themselves, basically, to a party. Well, it's a gathering. In New Jersey. So they take off, they head to New Jersey out in the middle of the sticks and join three other people. There's a very northern Italian looking blonde guy, you know, there's a kind of Grace Jones-like black woman, bald, And then
skinny as fuck.
Skinny. She has got an Aeon Flux skinny waist. Oh my god. And then there is a brunette with a red dress, you know, very, very Italian, very comely. So everybody starts getting along pretty fine until Alex notices that Ricky is making a fool of himself in front of everybody.
You get the sense that these guys are a bunch of dicks. Really, yeah. A bunch of assholes. And they're all playing. They're playing Ricky. They're cheating at cards. They're the one in white is pretty much a cock tease for Alex, just luring him on. And then no, get away from me, you barbarian, you thug.
They're doing everything possible to antagonize these two guys, who, admittedly, have kind of invited themselves where one would not normally want to show up. It's like, who are these strange people? Why are they in my house?
Then Alex says, I've had enough of this. That's all I can stand. I can't stand no more. Gets out his straight razor and starts threatening the fuck out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty much the movie turns into a game of cat and mouse from that point. As both parties try and get the upper hand of power amongst the others.
Yes.
And that's pretty much the extent of the movie from there on in.
When Alex tells Ricky to rape the brunette woman in the red dress, and he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, Ricky's not a bad guy. He's being clowned by these other guys. He wants to turn the tables, but you never get the impression that he's anything other than an edgy city guy. He's really not a bad guy.
Yeah,
he's definitely a follower.
Yeah, and he's out for fun. I mean, he wants to dance and have fun, and Alex is telling him not to, play to these people. Yeah. And then when Ricky takes the brunette in the red dress out, he's supposedly supposed to rape her, he has this broken bottle given to him by Alex. He tosses it. Mm-hmm. Ricky doesn't want anything. He keeps telling this woman, I don't want to hurt you. And then later, and this is compounded by the fact that on the way out the door, in comes this girl named Cindy.
Oh, poor, poor Cindy. Oh, my God. Quite possibly the most disturbing scene in the entire fucking movie.
She's probably the one upon whom this reputation of this movie hinges. Outside of the adults, playing with each other and beating each other and stuff like that, you got this, what appears to be either a very young adult or a late teenage girl.
By this point, David Hess has pretty much gone around the bend and is really absolutely just threatening everybody with a knife, dominating everybody, raping whatever he can, manipulating and being just an absolute fuckhead. And so Cindy shows up and he threatens her with the straight razor, it strips her, and grabs her crotch and fondles her and embarrasses her in front of everybody, and then throws her on the couch and then slices her up with the razor. And it is so
brutal.
And
it is very disturbing.
Much like a Mondo movie, much like Cannibal Holocaust, the music bed is this sweet, romantic, gentle music, and there's this absolute fucking brutality going on screen.
Yeah.
So the dissonance between the music and the visuals is so striking.
Well, also, there's another dissonance as well, in that the scene in the initial scenes where Alex is brutalizing this poor young lady, the dark-haired girl is seducing Ricky in the tool shed.
Yeah.
At the same time.
The terrible thing about that is she is basically offering Ricky sex to get her friends out of trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so, oh my God, heartbreaking.
Yeah, it really is, because it's pretty obvious she is thoroughly disgusted by the whole thing. Yeah.
Well, but at the same time,
she
does have a soft spot for Ricky, because, when Alex is about to punish him, she intervenes, on his behalf, and says, no, please,
Yeah.
Because Ricky is basically just a sweet guy who likes to have a bit of fun, maybe get a little out of hand, but he doesn't mean any harm.
And that's where the twist ending comes in, where the whole evening has been this setup to get revenge on Alex, because the host of the party was the brother of the girl who got strangled and raped and murdered at the very, very, very beginning of the movie. And that's kind of where the movie loses me right there.
I liked it because of the, it's very logical, very reasonable, but at the same time, you're like, wait a minute, couldn't they have gone about this a better way?
The reason that the ending does not work for me is because the whole movie long, they have been setting up this dichotomy of, okay, you have Ricky and Alex, and they are obviously complete bastards. However, yeah, you have the bourgeois elite hosting the party who are this complete bastards, and you don't quite know who is to blame here. Who is the true villain of the piece? Is it Alex and Ricky? Is it the bourgeois? They, you know, who is...
And I like that bit.
And it is clever, and I like that bit. And then they get to the, oh, it was all just a big scheme, and so, you know, we had my friends, you know, in a position where you could rape them, and we had ourselves in a position where you can get beat up. And I just don't like that twist ending. It ruins everything up to that point. If they had just let it ride, if they had just let the, we don't know who's the bad guys here, I think it would have been a much, much stronger flick.
Yeah, it really is a poor plan. And this is one of the great weaknesses in my mind about the movie. I like the twist ending, but I think that so many things could have been done better.
I'll give them, okay, my feelings of the ending aside, the plan of theirs is shit. It's a shit plan. Why do you have the gun that you need to overpower the two bastards in the drawer on the other side of the room? Why don't you have it tucked away? Because what their plan is that they will antagonize the thugs and get them to attack them, and then they will whip out the gun and blow them away in self-defense.
It's a terrible plan.
It's a terrible plan unless you're in the South.
Ooh.
So you don't have the gun. The gun is on the other side of the room. You've lost control of the situation because
the whole time they,
you know, these two are raping the fuck out of all of your friends, and you've got one, your friend tied up to the pool table, and like he can't do anything. So you've lost complete control of the situation. Why do you not have like a fifth friend up in like the upstairs with a gun who can come down when things get ahead and say, hey, you know, this needs to stop? And, you know, so it's a shit plan from the outset.
Yeah. One of the most interesting things for me is watching everyone's faces and trying to figure out what's going on behind their eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like everybody has really, really great expressions and faces and complete unreadable poker faces a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And it makes for a really interesting psychological study, just watching these people, you know, watching the two hoods and watching their quote-unquote victims. Then everything gets thrown for a complete monkey wrench when this poor little innocent blonde neighbor lady comes wandering in. And that's the part that really was a bit of a downer for me. I mean, not just her torture and getting sliced up, but just the fact that she got drug into this whole mess.
And that's another facet of why the movie, or why the plan is a shit plan, because all of a sudden your friend kind of wanders into this, into the line of fire, and all of a sudden she gets basically raped, not quite all the way physically raped, but I mean, that was as molested as anybody else is going to get.
Oh, yeah.
And then she gets all sliced up, and it's like, wow, you've just involved your friends that had no clue what the fuck was going on. Mm-hmm. That's a bad plan.
The best part for me was the sequence where, after having basically executed Alex, and he's dead floating in the pool, they go over to poor Ricky, who's lying there on the floor, his gut slashed.
By the hand of Alex, by the way.
Yeah, because Alex thought he was being betrayed by Ricky, and he sliced him. And the tall, dark-haired man wants to kill him. And the others are like, no, he wasn't so bad.
No, it just
one.
It's
just the dark-haired one.
Just the one, the lady in red. She's the most sympathetic out of the bourgeois. She is the one that, okay, this is going a little too far. No, put the gun down. This shit ends now.
Yeah.
And the thing about Alex that you got to remember is this man apparently has huge esteem issues.
Oh,
the two times that Ricky stands up to him, he's like, me? You're talking like that to me? And he looks genuinely hurt. Not like he's mocking Ricky, but mm-hmm. like he feels like he's been betrayed. He gets up and he gets all emotional and stuff. I mean, David has one of the most emotive faces I've seen in horror movies. My God, this man is, especially when he gets shot in the dick. And this just tremendous 10-second scream.
Best scream ever, by the way.
It's like, holy shit.
We also have to give mad props to Hess because he is so fucking slimy. Oh my god. Yes. He is such
he's
a
New York's
fucking
sleazebag.
Yeah, I mean,
oh my god.
You just feel dirty watching him act, you know, cuz he's so greasy.
It's pretty much Last House on the Left but in Italy. I mean, he is basically playing Krug again. He is a fucking cunt. Fuck.
And he's so good at it. He's so gleefully evil. It's like Alex from Clockwork Orange. God. I mean, I want to like him because he's so, you know, just gleefully bad. But I realize if I like him, then I basically have made myself adjunct to this total colossal douchebag.
So the thing I particularly like about Hess's performance in this is I think that if they'd done this with any other actor, it wouldn't have worked. Because the guy is just so into the role of being greaseball. You know, he's perfect for it.
I think I know why he was so invested in the role. Deodato, he had approached him and said, I really want you in my movie. Let me give you, you know, a portion of the rights to the movie. And he brought him on board and, like, David Hess rewrote his dialogue. So that was...
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Right. So it was mostly his, if everybody else is kind of weird and stilted and David is much more natural and flowing, is because he wrote what he knew would be natural and flowing.
Thing is, I felt Ricky was also natural and flowing.
He might have rewritten his dialogue too. I mean, who better to write a dialogue for an American than an American?
True.
In an Italian movie.
The stuff that worked for me in the movie, okay, now I didn't like the ending, but I'm not completely down on it. All the way up to the end, it was really, really good. I loved the editing in the movie. Like, so you've got Cindy being sliced up and David Hess just absolutely leering like a motherfucker. And they keep cutting away to the bourgeois watching on in abject horror. And it's kind of this surrogate for the viewers being abject horrified at what is going on in front of the screen.
That was a well done part of that.
Right. Or like the beginning, you were a little confused how when David was strangling the girl and raping the girl at the very beginning, and it kept flashing to black. Mm-hmm. And you were like, is that supposed to be happening? It's like, yeah, it is. It's supposed to be kind of desensitizing you, I think. It's supposed to be this kind of weird stylistic. I liked it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely... So I liked the editing in the movie. It was very strongly edited.
I like the director's decision to keep on David Hess's face when he was geeking out. You know, when he was just sleazing.
Oh, man,
that upper lip, you know, of his. It's just that mouth is just really helps because it just... His smile is so gleefully sleazy and dirty and filthy.
And the bit where he's laughing when he's chucked the dark-haired guy in the pool. Mm-hmm. And he's pushing him with his foot to get him back in the water. And he's just like... That was brilliant, that laugh.
And then he pees on him.
He did, yeah. And he's pulling down his pants and going, ah! And he pisses on him. Oh, God.
I mean, as much as I am a fan of the beautiful Annette Bell, I thought her acting performance wasn't as good as I've seen in some of the other films I've seen her in. But on the other hand, she definitely did such a wonderful job of come on. Denied.
Oh yeah, no, she totally cock blocked him in the shower. She was leaning. She's all like soaping up and rubbing her titties and pressing up against the glass. And David Hess is all like, you know, licking the glass. Uh-huh. And she's all like, and he'll come in. Why don't you come in and have a shower with me? And he comes in, ditches his pants, and then like, bye.
And I love the way she built up to it because they start in the kitchen and she's getting something and he kind of is reluctant. She knows that she's maybe, you know, luring him into, you know, something, but he eventually goes down, he gets on his knees, and he kind of, you know, licks her leg or whatever, and then of course she says, there's a time and a place for everything.
And I love the dispassionate look that she has on her face. This is absolutely dead, you know, expressionless nothing on her face as David's, like, licking her pussy. And it's like... What the fuck is going on? Is this like just really terrible acting? No, it's all part of the plan.
I thought she was just just basically going for it. Because, I mean, it didn't. It, there was no indication that there was any animosity between them. I mean, Alex was going after Ricky because he was making a fool of himself, you know, doing the striptease with this dance while they were dancing to some, you know, some disco music. And he was getting pissed off. And so this woman kind of pulls him over the back, you know, kind of chill out. She goes in the kitchen. He goes after her, you know, and then goes after her. I thought she was into it. That's why I thought she wasn't reacting because she wasn't stopping him.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, okay, she wants this.
Uh-huh. Again, come on, honey.
There's a
common
place. Right,
and it's now, if that was actually the role that she's supposed to do, if that was what she was supposed to be doing, it was brilliant acting on her part.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, she seemed a bit more emotional in some of the other movies I've seen.
So, a question for you guys, then. Do you think the movie would be stronger if they removed the opening rape and murder between David and the woman? Because if you play the game where, okay, I don't know who's the bad guy, you know, they're just being dicks at the poker game. Do you think withholding the information on what's going on, okay, you'd have to rewrite the ending.
Yeah.
Do you think that would have made it stronger?
Maybe changing the arrangement, perhaps. Like, for example, doing the bit where he chases her down, gets in her car, and does the nasty stuff that he does to her, having that be like a flashback or a cutaway or something at the very end, that perhaps would have made it a little bit stronger.
Or, if you want to be really subtle in a way that makes people go, wait a minute, what the hell was that? Put a picture of him and his sister somewhere in the house where the camera goes past it.
Ooh,
and you get a subliminal image of it, and then later you go where Alex is standing,
yeah,
and he says,
nice,
that was my sister, and he's standing here, and then the picture's back there.
And like you do a rack focus or something.
Or it's just near enough for you to go, oh, shit! You know, and then they're like, oh, my God.
All right.
So we agree that there, in fact, you could strengthen things up a little bit. It's not necessarily a bad movie as it stands. I don't like the ending, but it's okay.
Well,
one of the things about the ending that is so powerful for me is the bit where they spare Ricky. I mean, that to me was like the strongest moment of the film.
I agree.
Right there. And that moment would have been lost if you don't have all of the other stuff leading up to it. I mean, admittedly, you can still have them sparing Ricky in our improved edited version.
Right.
You know.
Fan edit. There you go.
One thing that I particularly like is the jacket illustration. The jacket art really does something for me. I don't know what it does with you guys, but
I like it. It's very evocative. It's not a photo. It's hand-drawn art,
mm-hmm,
and it combines several images in the shape of a skull with teeth. And with the house being the middle being the mouth.
Right.
And so it's like,
the other parts
and
of the
and
face.
The razors in there as part of the look.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, that's really clever. I like that.
The one last thing I did want to bring up, the music. We touched on the dissonance between the peaceful, serene music and the violence. I love the disco music.
Oh, hell yeah.
I fucking love the disco.
It's so obviously just completely right for this movie.
Definitely. The music I felt really was strong.
So you got anything else left you got to say?
I'm good.
Annabelle's hot.
All right. I guess that's everything I got. So is it nasty?
In some respects, yes. Definitely.
Yeah, I would agree.
I can see definitely why it was banned, because sexual violence, as we have learned up to this point, sexual violence is absolutely verboten on the list. So
yeah.
I can see why the blue hairs got up in a tizzy.
Yeah, and especially since it was committed against a really young person.
So would you put it on the list?
I think, yeah, just for that reason, yeah.
If that scene was edited or altered or changed somehow so that maybe if she wasn't naked, or maybe if it wasn't involving the straight razor or something.
All right, yeah, no, I think this is going to be our first hat trick of the it should belong on a no list. Don't do this list.
Yeah.
Everything else works really well.
It's a reasonably tame movie up to that point.
Although I will say that the cutting scenes, I mean, you can tell it's fake. I mean, you can tell. They weren't using a real razor on fake flesh or a fake... They were using a fake one on real flesh.
So I suppose with really skillful execution, it would have been really disturbing. Yeah. I suppose just mostly...
It's the subject matter.
It's the subject matter.
It's the imagery that they're getting across that is really disturbing. So, all right, banned, reluctantly, yes, all right.
If not banned, should definitely come with a big warning label.
Did you like Last House on the Left? Not Last House on the Left, wrong fucking movie. So, did you like Last fucking House on the Left?
Banner's Italians.
So, did you like House on the Edge of the Park?
I did in some respect. I did like the acting. I liked the suspense. I liked David Hess. You know,
he was always good. He's always quality. Yeah.
I like, you know, everybody I think got their characters really dug into what was going on there. Although a lot of the time I was thinking, well, these people don't have any reaction. I realized later on, oh, wait.
That was intentional.
Intentional. Now I know. So if I saw it again, you know, as to study it and stuff, I can go, okay.
Uh-huh.
So that I understand. And so, yeah, they're doing a good job with their acting.
Did you like it?
I enjoyed it for the most part. I really liked the performances. I really enjoyed watching the people's faces because there were so many moments of you're like, huh? And watching their faces actually provided a little bit of a clue as to certain things.
I am going to have to reluctantly go no. It is strong all the way up to the last 5 minutes, and it just doesn't work at the end for me. It just doesn't come together. So, reluctantly, no. All right. We'll catch you guys next week.
And now, intermission. Refreshment time.
All right, that's another one down. This is the point of the episode usually where I throw it to next week and tell you what's coming up. This time, it's the point of the episode where I apologize for next week. I fucking spit on your grave. We have to get through all of these, folks. But in the meantime, please, drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you. God, we'll need somebody to talk to. The email address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you then. God help us all.